Yay! Well, hello everyone, and welcome one more time. I mean, boy, we've been doing this a long time now, and I'm just glad to still be here and do this, even if it sounds like I'm getting a cold. I'm probably not. I'm just extremely tired because of the situation. But I'm happy to be here. I'm happy that you're all here. I'm sure we're going to be joined by a few more people. But without further ado, you know, Robert, let's get some updates on things that we normally talk about. And then let's field questions, because we got people here who came today who are going to have questions. Good morning, Dale, and I'm very, very happy you joined us.
Hey, good morning, Mel. Good morning, everyone.
Okay. So, Robert, let's start with, is there a new pandemic?
Okay. All right. Well, let's start with where you left off before you hit the record button, because the sleep factor is huge. And, you know, when you get disrupted from your sleep cycle, and, you know, this can happen once in a while, you'll be fine. But if it acute over a very long period for some, if it's a little bit, but if it's a lot over a short period, it can be devastating, even in a situation like mine. That's kind of what I was intimating at, because, you know, last week was it within the last 2 weeks now, it's hard to know time. It's a very emotional week for me. You know, we lost one of our family cats we adopted 8 years ago and, you know, watched him slowly fade away. The family was here. My kids were very sad. You know, we were grateful to be around him and not have to take him to a vet for euthanization. But, you know, that's a very deep emotional wound, like losing a family member. You guys know how much you love a pet. And then I learned, you know, a day or two later that one of my dear friends, John Rappaport, one of the greatest journalists of the 20th and the 21st century, who had, you know, been on my show many times, befriended, he died on the same day. So I was feeling it pretty intensely. And then I had to fly out for the Red Pill Expo over the weekend. And that's an intense event for me, because I not only speak at the event, but I emcee the event, and I'm still doing my live broadcast over there and also trying to pre-record things and then interact with the folks that are there. So by the time Monday hit, the event was over, I realized I hadn't slept in 3 days at least, because the beds were just horrible at this hotel. So I wasn't in great stead. You know, I went out to my favorite, even organic restaurant for lunch. I ate a little bit, but wasn't feeling it so much. And then by the time I got home that evening, my wife asked me, "What do you want for dinner?" I said, "You know, I'm not hungry. I don't feel up for it." Next day I woke up and I was like, I got some strange knife pains in my lower intestines. I don't understand what's going on here, but I'm not hungry again. And so, you know, continued on. It kept getting seemingly a little worse. Now, you know, so your question about a new pandemic, there was no explosive diarrhea. There was no vomiting. It was only very specifically pain and discomfort in a region that my wife and I know anatomy associated with either the ileocecal valve or the appendix. And, you know, I'm like, all right, you know, if it could be one or the other, it could be inflammation, could be acute infection. I had no fever though, so I didn't know what exactly was happening. So I started in earnest to do all the things I know to do to counteract that, you know, from homeopathic remedies that are specific to that, to the use of the bioactive silver hydrosol. I probably went through a bottle of Argentin 23 in like 12 hours, a big 16-ounce bottle. Was doing the copper as well. I did the beta-glucan for immune modulation for Better Way Health. And I was doing some electronic medicine as well with the Monocore, which I mentioned before. And I was doing castor oil packs over the area, realizing that if it is an acute appendicitis, the last thing you do is want it to burst and then have to go in and clean up a sepsis.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just continued hammering away at it and tried to rest, but at the same time, I still had my obligations, some of which I had made, you know, months in advance. So doing meetings that I shouldn't have been doing, but just laughing all the way through it, because if not, I would cry. And, you know, just consistently kept at it. And eventually I did some red light on it as well. And the Iteracare, if you know what that is, I did it a little everything. And yesterday woke up, finally I'd broken through whatever it was. Again, never had fever, never had diarrhea, but it was something that, you know, a great example of, even if you're in great health and great shape, you can put yourself out and exhaust yourself, and not just the physical body, but the emotional body, you know, having gone through it. Like one thing led to another that precipitated the vulnerability. And, you know, here I am a week later. First day I felt good enough to go back out into the garden this morning. I was so happy, just barefoot out there, you know, trimming the tomato bushes to make sure that they're growing their tomatoes and not their leaves and, you know, all the things that you do. And, you know, coming in talking about that. And then Mel mentions that he didn't sleep last night because of the AC noise and stuff. So be very cautious when that happens. And it's not just one thing. It's a multitude of things that can converge at any one given time that can tip you over the edge. And I know that when we're dealing with the Morgellons and related things in this group, it's more chronicities, long-term considerations, but there can be short-term considerations when you are thrown out of, let's say, a normal rhythm where, again, I come back to the sleep cycle. If it's disrupted, it can really open you up further than you already may be. And so that's my story. The good news is I'm on the mend. I didn't have to go to the doctor, the hospital, the ER, anything. I didn't have to take an antibiotic. There was no surgery. But there's diligence. There's vigilance. There's discipline. There's also the fear factor. I was never afraid. I know what was going on, and I'd monitored it and you know, was somewhat logical about it to go, all right, we'll keep an eye on this, see what other symptoms manifest or not. But still, I took it very seriously. And this is where, you know, people often, because of fear and of what could happen, they end up in a hospital scenario, which sometimes can save your life, but more often than not can create scenarios that your life is more threatened by the treatments for these things than the actual thing you were dealing with. So being very cautious about that as well, it takes a lot to get me into those places. Even when I was a kid and was raised pharmaceutically and medically, I remember having repeated tonsillitis, and I prayed to God all the time, please, God, don't let them take my tonsils. Now, I didn't know why. You know, it wasn't just a fear of surgery. It was like, I think that God gave me these for a reason, and they think I don't need them, but I think I need them. And so somehow I was able to navigate through that and keep all my body parts. So I try to maintain that as much as possible, and here I was tested again. So anyway, I'm on the mend. As far as the cyclospora issue, again, explosive diarrhea, it can be a joke from Taco Bell or Taco Hell, right? You go to Taco Bell and your intestines are in Taco Hell. But, you know, there are various methods that we can do to address that, including both the silver and the copper and various homeopathic remedies and other things like I did. There are similar manners of which, you know, the body is responding to an adverse exposure or overwhelming exposure to something. And explosive diarrhea is violent, but the body is going, get the hell out. So it's not necessarily that you want to suppress it, but you also don't want to ignore it, right? So there's a way, because dehydration could be serious in a serious diarrheal disease. That's why people do die of diarrheal diseases. But we've been able to address those things, even like cholera post-earthquake Haiti many years ago with the Sovereign Silver and Argentin 23, we had 100% success in remediating something that people were dying from at, you know, 90% rates. And instead of thanks in Haiti, Doctors Without Borders, who are under the United Nations, kicked us out, said, don't you dare tell anybody about this. Get out now or else. Which, even if there are good people in Doctors Without Borders, you recognize they're controlled by the pharmaceutical industry that doesn't want genuine options that cost pennies on the dollar compared to their vaccine programs or drug programs that likely don't work very well anyway or can precipitate death. So, again, these are stories to share to let you know how much you can do outside of the medical pharmaceutical realm. I know many of you know that already here, but just another story to share. All of these things that happen to me become stories in real time and after the fact that I get to share on my show. So, thank you, Mel, for the opening introduction, allowing me to share that. And hopefully it makes some impact of a positive nature as we start today's broadcast.
Well, you know, Robert, for years, and I mean from the very, very beginning with John, okay, we would tell everybody that sleep is one of the key factors, if not the most important thing in healing. And people would think, Mel, oh, you're crazy. You're nuts. You just want us to go to bed early because you're an old man and you go to bed early. I go to bed early because the energy from a good night's sleep allows me to do what I want as I approach my 81st birthday. That ain't a spring chicken. Most people are dead by this time in our world today.
Yep.
Amen. Hey, Mel, I've got a couple of questions I'd love to direct to Robert, if you don't mind.
Well, no, I'm definitely going to get there. I just want to finish my thought. Robert, whenever I think about hotels,
yeah,
and I read all the years of people telling me their stories, I'm very afraid of a hotel room. Two things mm-hmm. can be wrong. Someone who has a toxic disease could have left it in the carpet, and depending on the quality, there could be mold coming through the air filters.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's why I travel with my silver pillow, Silverite, you know, which is a silver threaded pillow. And, you know, I have
Stop. Will you send me one of those for my birthday?
When is your birthday, Mel?
December 15th. You got some time to save up.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk again because I want you to have one. I think everybody should have one. It's one of the links on the RSV approved section of my website, robertscottbell.com. And I've been sleeping on that for years. I got them for my wife and my kids, and I recommend it because that will neutralize, at least from an airborne local perspective, you know, when you're on it. It makes a big difference. Also, of course, we talk about the grounding mats. I travel with a grounding mat, so I'll put that under the silver pillow so I'll have some contact with it. So that's another aspect of the electromagnetic stressors outside of the, you know, again, the toxicological or biological burdens that might be there as well. And the wellness blanket, which is a palladium-lined blanket that you charge in the sun every 6 weeks. That can get you another factor, layer of protection as well. So keeping strong, of course, as you know, sleep provides for normal metabolic functions throughout the day when you're not sleeping. If you don't sleep, then your body never gets a chance to regenerate and recover, much less detoxify. So I'll pause there. I know John B. wants to add in, unless, Mel, you've got some more.
Well, no, I wanted to thank everyone who's here for showing up today, especially John B., because you know, like you, he has so many other things going on and a fairly decent-sized family. So, John, go ahead. I'm going to let you get in here now.
Thank you, buddy. Robert, I was looking forward to you being here today because there's something that an emerging issue that's getting a lot of attention. And I wanted to get you some clarification on a couple of things from you. And then I'm talking about the alpha-gal problem that's been associated with Lone Star ticks, and some people are associating it with also with mRNA injury from vaccines. But I've seen promotions talking about auricular acupuncture being extremely effective for people that are dealing with alpha gal. So I just wanted to find out what your position is on all of this, where it's coming from and how to treat it.
Well, wait a minute. What is it? Let's start with what it is.
Alpha gal is a protein that causes people not to be able to eat red meat or meat from any mammal. So people, they're basically trying to fix it so you can't go out and hunt when the food supply disappears. You can't feed yourself, you know, with a gun, and because they want to control the food supply in the long run. But it's a horrendous thing. People go from being able to eat anything to that you can't eat a hamburger. It puts you into serious inflammatory crisis. Anyway, is that accurate?
Yeah, it's still a question of what is it in terms of, you know, the interactivity of a tick bite that would manifest such a symptom or series of symptoms. But I've been hearing, at least anecdotally, from some folks that I know that the correction seems to be bioenergetic. And, you know, I've had people report that specific acupuncture points on the ear that are addressed with acupuncture needles completely restore the function so that, you know, whatever this is reversed. Now, you know, I had an interview with my good friend, Dr. Lee Merritt, at the Red Pill Expo, talking about proteins, the misshapen or folded proteins associated with Creutzfeldt-Jakob or mad cow disease. And it was fascinating as she dug deep into the research. She found that it may, in fact, be, you know, not a communicable something. Because, you know, the theory was of mad cow is like you ate the brains or nervous system of animals that were sickened by something. But it turns out it may, in fact, be an imbalance of minerals, particularly low copper, once again, and high manganese. Manganese acting like a capacitor, limiting the electrical flow in certain circumstances that would provide for normal protein conformation. So we come back to, again, vulnerability. What are the mineral imbalances? What are the mineral deficiencies? What's wrong with the energy flow in the body that then manifests as something we measure and relate as a physical malady? You know, this gets into the quantum physics of life itself and reality, but it all comes back to these minerals. You know, are we adequately, you know, replenishing that which has been depleted over perhaps even a lifetime, much less a short burst when we do, for instance, we talk about too much zinc or too much vitamin C in the absence of copper drops. Copper, and then, you know, without copper, the electrical system of the body is very much corrupted. And in this case, it was specific, as we talked about, not the alpha-gal, because I don't have the details on that, although I'm aware of what's going on here, but specific to the mad cow, high manganese, low copper, and then it's manifesting as these misshapen proteins. So, again, there's a lot still to know about this. And, John, I know I've been following it as well. It's a mystery a bit, but I know that I'm hearing reports of certain interventions that are obviously not drug interventions that are correcting this strangest manifestation that suddenly you can't eat animal proteins.
Yeah. Well, I knew that you were not only on the cutting edge, but interacting with a lot of people who are on the cutting edge. So that's why I wanted to bring this to your attention so you could kind of help clarify things for people, because a lot of people still haven't even heard about it. But it's a very disruptive thing to have happen to you, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, the intention, you know, when you say, like, you speculate that we don't want you to be able to eat things that you can get with a gun, right? I mean, there's a lot of agendas associated with that, and we do know of very strange experimentation on things in the natural world to make them not natural, to create scenarios that are really damaging to survivability, you know, for the average folks. So I cannot dispute that ultimately there are some nefarious schemes afoot, and there have been forever. At the same time, there's always a remedy. And yet, you know, they want us to believe we're at their mercy, you know, for a vaccine that would somehow, this is just probably what they'll promote eventually. We have a vaccine now against alpha-gal, for instance, because now everybody's afraid of it. So that vaccine will probably create more damage, obviously, like the COVID shots did. So these are things to definitely be sensitive and aware of, and recognize that the solutions, if you want to call them that, are not in the same industry that creates the problem.
Right. I mean, they're in the earth. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess that answers the question, okay, are we having another form of a pandemic? Always trying to kill us, and they're always trying to scare us to death. And the fact that they're actually succeeding is a horrible thing. I mean, I've never seen people as afraid as they are today.
Yeah. And that fear is an immune suppressant, if there ever was one, on top of a lack of sleep and regeneration, as we started discussing, you know, again, my particular circumstance that I've been going through so recently, which is, you know, very unusual. Obviously, I'm usually bouncing with more energy, you know, than I had at 24 years of age. So when this was going on, I'm like, you know, I got to really assess everything and make sense out of it if I can. A lot of times these things still remain mysterious, but, you know, I look back in a current scenario, I've learned a lot to where I can start picking things from my recent, you know, past. I'm talking very recent, to say, oh, this and this and this and this adds up to this. It's not necessarily a microbial issue, but it's a vulnerability that occurred because the energy, or the lack thereof, precedes the manifestation in the physical body. And I know that goes so far above and beyond so many of those that even are in the natural realm, but medically or physically oriented. But as a homeopath, I mean, obviously it's energy. All of the, you know, metabolic medicines start with energy and then what comes from it. And even the minerals that are measured physically are also facilitating transmutation or creation of energy within the body. So we really have to honor that process of how we restore and regenerate so that function actually can occur at that optimal level we're targeting or looking or working for.
Awesome.
Well, I don't want to say it's a sad world, but all right. So, John, you got any more questions for him?
I probably will, but I just wanted to make sure that I got clarity on the current state of affairs surrounding that alpha-gal thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's start, if we don't mind, we'll go down to the bottom. Lori, do you have a question?
I do. Is this the that new like tick that they're talking about that's causing people not to eat meat that they're kind of dumping everywhere?
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, the alpha-gal syndrome, yes.
Okay, so it's definitely not a tick and it wasn't a bat with the COVID. You think it's all kind of part of what the...
It seems to correspond with a tick bite, but, you know, that's where you get into the nefarious schemes of, various agencies or around the world weaponizing things in nature to create scenarios that they want to see happen. So I'm not disputing that vector it seems to be real, but the correction, as I said, they would like to promote one day if they can sooner than later, like mRNA shots against alpha-gal, for instance. So they create a problem, create a solution that creates more problems. And since most people aren't open to the things we discuss here, they're very vulnerable to be made worse because of the fear of or the discomfort or the disgust now that they can't eat what they want to eat. But, you know, when Mel says it's a sad, 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 sad world, I can hear our good friend Seth Quinto from Sovereign Natural saying, yes, sad, a sad diet, standard American diet, coming back to the fact that if you eat food grown with toxic pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, GMOs containing heavy metals, plasticizers, you name it, you know, that works against us as much as we need to eat. I would rather fast. And I have. I pretty much hardly ate anything for 4 days in recovery. That was another aspect of recovery from these things. Fasting is a profound tool in nature. Animals know how to do that to overcome devastating situations. And, of course, you want to consult with someone if you're not sure if that's right for you because there are a lot of factors to consider. But the fact that you can starve out whatever might be considered parasitic, which we see a lot of cancer associated with parasites, it is a very viable and most powerful strategy that involves almost nothing other than, for the most part, staying hydrated or giving, you know, some level of mineral intake, and you can survive for prolonged periods. You know, I might have lost 9 or 10 pounds in those 4 days, which I couldn't afford to lose technically, but I'm okay. I'm fine. I can rebuild whatever I've lost. But the idea is, don't feed that which is feeding on you or what you've given it.
I always talk about that when it comes to toxic disease. You do not want to feed the fungal and parasitic components of disease. You just must starve it and kill it at the same time. If you feed it and it's trying to kill it, you're not going to get the success you're hoping for.
Correct.
Is it true that people who have alpha-gal can eat the lab-grown meat? That speaking of Bill Gates, is it true that they can eat the lab-grown meat?
I haven't encountered anyone that would claim that. I mean, if you've heard of that, I have not yet heard that. That would be very interesting, though. Another layer of complexity to go, all right, here's how we get them to eat the stuff they don't want to eat by this method. So, again, it wouldn't shock me or surprise me, but I had not heard that yet.
Okay.
Lori, any other questions?
I did. I bought the Alta Soca that you told me about for.
Yes.
Okay. And he said I'm going to take like 15 a day. So I was only taking 9, but I.
Okay.
What happened to. I got a bone spur on my finger. And
yeah.
I've been trying to. So I backed out on it because I didn't know what else to do. Would it be good to go back? Because I know. Logos, he said, John said that I'm on a complete bone building, you know, protocol anyhow. Just to add this, would it be okay, would it be safe now to just do a few of those a day? Because I'm not sure what to do.
Sure. And remember, I've said this in previous calls, maybe you didn't hear it, but a bone spur indicates too much zinc and not enough copper. So that's a missing component often in the repair and rebuild, because zinc is very important for repair and rebuild, but it needs a general contractor to tell it what to do, and that's copper's role. So if you don't do that, zinc can build stuff you don't want or need. That doesn't make zinc a bad guy. It just means, hey, you know, how you have a job site and nobody telling the carpenter what to do, it builds anything it wants. And you think, well, that's cool, but I didn't want that. I didn't order it. So copper's there to make sure, as a general contractor, that the repair and rebuild is appropriate to what you need, not what it wants to do.
Okay, so if I'm taking 2 tablespoons of copper a day, then that's efficient?
Well, you might want to go up to a third dose a day based on what you're telling me.
Okay.
I heard that from someone else to you, Lori, to go up to 3.
Well, there was... I tried to find, they don't even make the big half gallons anymore. So I had to buy the 32 ounces of copper now. And
they're
so
not making the half gallons anymore?
No, I know. I tried
I said that to Seth and them, and they're like, we don't have enough demand to make it, and we really have to grow the awareness, and then they'll make it again. It was frustrating for everybody that knew how important and valuable it was, but very few. It's like the few first adopters that recognized how important this is, but you have to almost create the market for it before it can be done. You know, it's like John knows, being in business, you know, you can't make something that very few people buy and have it sit on the shelf and expire, right? It's just not a good way to go about it, as much as you'd like to be able to do that. So hopefully one day we'll get those larger quantities available again.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Dale. Come in, Dale, and good morning. And I'm glad you came, because I keep telling you that this man may have some ideas that can help your specific issues.
All right. Good morning, Mel. Good morning, Robert, Scott, Bill. Good to have you on here. I've been dealing with like pre-diabetes and have been dealing with high fasting glucose in the morning, or blood sugar levels in the morning. And I know on a previous call you had told me about the Food Research chromium and vanadium, I think was another one. I'm taking both of those. I've also been trying to add more just plant-based diet, you know, more. Was trying to add some beans, some oatmeal in the morning. I've been following these guys from Mastering Diabetes. And when I've been doing that, I have, and just eating more salad in general, more greens, vegetables. I have seen my fasting blood sugars go down doing that.
Okay.
But, so that's good, but it's also creating a lot more itching. So I feel like my carbs are too high and I'm feeding whatever candida is in my body. And because the candida rash that I have is kind of flaring up, and I don't know. I'm on all these, the Logos stuff and all that, but is there, I know that we don't promote, you know, prescription strength antifungals and stuff, because most of them are hard on your liver and kidneys. But
yeah,
I have been reading one called Nystatin that some people claim that it's not harmful for your liver and kidneys. I just didn't know what your opinion is on that. I've seen some people on online forums and everything saying they've had success in helping to reduce some of the candida in their gut from that. But
yeah, I mean, it is an allopathic drug. It's not as toxic as some of the antifungals, but I still wouldn't say it's not toxic at all. So mm-hmm. if you can avoid it, that would be appropriate. But, you know, when it comes to the fasting blood sugar and you know, hypoglycemia/diabetes, you know, we talked about that food research. There's also one, I don't know if I mentioned before, Absolute Wellness, my friend Sherry Neal has, which combines with the fulvic and humic acid, which is really focused on leaning in heavily into the 200 micrograms of chromium per dose, and that is the right whole food form of it. So 3 to 4 times daily, I don't know how frequently you were taking it, seems to be the, you know, the corrective level for those that are still, you know, struggling with getting that back in control. And as a homeopath, I will reveal to you, if I haven't before, the 2 key homeopathic remedies that keep coming up in this circumstance, and that's homeopathic iris and homeopathic lycopodium. So if you can get a, you know, a 12X or a 12C of either or both of those, you can tap into that and use that every day. And there's no harm in doing that. That will help the body to manage it more efficiently as you restore the stores of the chromium particularly. So how often were you taking that food research form?
Just whatever I think it was 3 pills a day.
Okay.
I think the bottle came with 90 capsules. So,
whatever
was recommended on the bottle.
If at 3 times a day you don't fully resolve it, then go to a 4th. And then just monitor it until that the stores are back and functioning. And again, you want to throw in those homeopathic remedies too to see how that manages it as well. And as far as the, you know, the antifungal aspects, of course, both silver and copper share some crossover in there. Some species even more vulnerable to copper than silver. Some more silver to copper. But between those two, if you can drive them particularly into the gut, that was another thing I was doing as well with this you know, this last week that I had this. Intestinal pain, not knowing a true cause other than everything I shared with you. But I did the silver aloe and silver copper, so I drove it down into cool inflammation, and if there was an infection, to neutralize it down there. So the aloe combination at that point becomes important to deliver it to the area in need. You can also do, you know, as we've talked about, coffee enemas. You know, I'll tend to either add silver or copper to them, or do a water cleanse afterwards. And in that pure, clean water, you can add in the silver and the copper, and so you'll get direct colorectal interface. At that point, if there is any lingering, you know, imbalances, microbial imbalances, you'll be able to neutralize them safely.
Okay. That sounds like a good idea. You know, Robert, I've often told people that the most difficult thing to get rid of in the body is fungus. Is that correct?
Yep. Oh, yeah. Its roots run deep, so to speak. So you have to be very diligent and vigilant over time. And we can knock things out quick, but there's a little bit of residue that you're like, you really got to work hard to get at so it doesn't keep coming back.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So how much copper and silver would you add to the enema?
Maybe a half an ounce to an ounce, depending on, you know, how severe the circumstance is. I mean, it's safe to do full strength, but it would be expensive, you know.
Right.
So just make sure the water is very clear and clean, you know, that's purified and filtered. You know, we use our Echo water filter, which is, a tankless RO that leads into a hydrogen module. So we actually have hydrogen in the water on top of adding whatever else we add into it.
Okay. Yeah, I would use distilled water that I just could distill at home.
Sure.
You good, right, Dale?
Well, yeah, if there's a round two, I have other questions, but we can move on some more.
No. Go ahead. Let's get them in, buddy.
All right. Well, okay. So I'm this is kind of for my mom, or it is for my mom. She is dealing with fungal overgrowth too in Candida, but she is dealing with symptoms of like dementia, early onset Alzheimer's. Early onset. She's in her 70s, but so anyway, I'm trying to convince her like to get off of sugar and this and that, and that she'll think she's healthy and saving calories and everything just by, oh, instead of eating a full meal, I'm going to just eat a few scoops of ice cream, and she'll go out and just have ice cream for her meal, you know?
Oh,
and
my.
It's like,
yeah,
good grief. You're doing more harm than good there. But,
yeah.
So I'm working on her with that. I'm taking her to a, functional medicine, homeopathic doctor thing, but coming up in a few weeks. But I've been doing some research and just didn't know your opinion on three different supplements that may help her in the meantime. One is ergothionine. I don't know if I'm saying it right. Another one is nicotinamide mononucleotide. And then the third one is lithium orotate. It's a specific type of lithium. I didn't know your opinion on maybe trying to help supplement her with those to see if those may help. I know she needs fungal detox as well, but.
Sure. Well, I've had experience with the lithium orotate over the years, so the other two, not so much. But if we're dealing with dementia, Alzheimer's, I revealed a new study that came out showing that delivering copper into the brain can help act like the garbage man to remove various amyloids or debris, right? We know that copper plays a role in phase one liver detox, but apparently it's very critical for pathways of excretion elimination from brain tissue that accumulates things if not having adequate blood flow, lymphatic flow, etc. And the copper, we know, plays a role in both of those things when we talk about endothelial integrity. But specific to, you know, anything that manifests like this, there are other things that people are now researching and coming out with about the use of creatine in certain ways. Creatine with various adaptogenic mushrooms, in a sense, to help also facilitate, you know, function there. Obviously, there are some that are going into the blue dye, you know, fabric dye,
methylene
blue. And I recognize that can have a short-term benefit, but then you do autopsies on the people on it, it turned their brains blue. I don't know if I'm a super fan long-term, but I get it. There's a place for anything to consider getting out of a crisis. But ultimately, we know that the mitochondrial issues are real, and that comes through mostly copper and magnesium. So I would say more copper plays a huge role here. If you didn't catch my interview within the last, I think it was two weeks ago now or so, I had Morley Robbins, my good friend, who wrote a book on copper in studio, and we had a great discussion on some of these things. I would urge you to watch and listen and read or get his book on copper if you want to go further in that regard. As far as, you know, other things that your mother's dealing with, when I was at the cancer conference, Beljansky, and even at the Red Pill, I always like to mention that, you know, life can be hard, as we know here. Life can be bitter at times. And there's got to be a role and a place for sweetness. That's why people, you know, reach for that jug or scoop of ice cream. You know, it's like it gives a little sweetness into their life. And so I get the sentiment and the need, but can we do it without harming ourselves? Yes, we can. And some of the shows I've done recently talk about this plant-based sweetener, even replacing stevia for me now, called Dulsa. So you guys can research that at dulsalife.com. I think it's linked up in the RSB approved section. And it's providing an opportunity to feed the good guys. In other words, it's got prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics, and it actually nourishes the good gut microbiome while also providing a gentle, delicious sweetness to add if you do coffee or tea. You can even bake with it. So it provides a solution because some people don't like the bitter aftertaste or, you know, whatever of stevia. And there can be some arguable negative effects of high quantities of stevia in the gut, although I think low is not a big deal. But the Dulsa provides another opportunity you can introduce your mother to so that she has some of that sweetness that she needs You know, I want a little sweets to satiate myself, but I don't, you know, I don't want it to harm her. So that Dulce formula is quite innovative, and I've been putting people on it, and they've been very pleasantly surprised that they can have something nice and sweet without harm.
Can you spell that, please?
Yeah, D-U-L-S-A.
Just like it
says. Yeah, Dulce Life. I think it's linked up. When you go to RSB approved stuff on my website, you'll probably see it there.
Yeah, anytime I tell her.
Send me that link, Robert, and I'll put it on my website.
Okay. Yeah, let me grab it.
Well, if you put a copy of this call in, I'll inject it into the post.
Okay.
Okay, and then people can use it. Oh, by the way, did I ever get an answer from you about the TruthCon conference?
Yeah, I just, it's for me personally, I would love to go to it, but I think I have a conflict on my calendar, which makes, that's my always concern, because I can double book too easily, so I appreciate you giving me the date so I can cross-reference it, but that's what I remember seeing. But if anybody's in the neighborhood, when Mel's down there, you should go.
Okay, well, hey, going to be there with Dr. Allison Ashley, November 6th through 8th. And I'm not flying. I'm taking the train with a sleeper car and a diner car from Denver to Dallas. So anybody's going to be in Dallas, they can come and see yours truly. Be part of this conference. And I said, we have two booths there, and we're going to present my book, which none of you really know about it too much, called The ABCs of Toxic Disease. So, and that book will be available, oh, I hope by September. All right. So, and if you're a toxic disease sufferer, you contact me and get a free book. All right. So, let's continue. Dale, anything else?
No, I think, well, you mentioned delivering copper into the brain. Does it just automatically go there? When you
that's the thing about the allopathic view of how do you get things there. They try to manipulate drug molecules and different things to combine it. The point is, you know, getting it there in terms of how we deliver it, the ions, the copper 1, copper 2, have little to no limit to get there through blood. But even intranasal application of the copper may have more direct access as well as a consideration. So, but yes, the forms of copper in food are very difficult, as we've talked about, to digest, break down, assimilate, and utilize fully. So we are providing, with the sovereign copper, a way to flood the system, and that would include all of the pathways, including that which the brain needs through this. May require higher dosages initially to get things back online, but then you can taper down. And even, as I said, 10 doses of it in a day is not toxic. That's how safe this form of copper is, which is you really can't deliver that much copper. You'd have to take so much more that it would become problematic, but it won't be for the sovereign copper.
Okay, great.
So the good
Thank you.
The good news is you don't have to stand on your head.
Yeah, right. By the way, I just sent you the Dulce Life discount code link and everything, Mel, in the email.
Great.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Gail. All right. She's going to have questions. Julie.
Yeah, I've been reading this book. It's called The Conspiracy Against Lithium, and that basically says that it might be an essential mineral, and that the people with Alzheimer's have low levels of lithium. And it's And so what are your thoughts about lithium in the diet or supplementation or in food?
Well, it comes back to what was mentioned earlier as a form that people are reporting good results with is lithium orotate. And, there is a natural element. When I grew up in Georgia, I think, you'll remember this, Lithia Springs was named because it was lithium that was rich in the water, and that people, when they drank that water, they reported being happy. You know, it's like bubbly and happy, right? And so it's not just that lithium does that. There's a lot more that is being discovered about it. So I think it's the harm from taking lithium orotate. You'd have to take a whole lot to create that imbalance at the level that most people are getting it. So I would say to work with that and test it, put it to the test and see how you do. I have no problem with that.
What dosage should you start out with?
Well, I don't know what is out there as far as dosage levels. Honestly, as a homeopath, I tend to like to take micro dosing on everything and build up. But there are other supplemental forms that may contain more than less. I just have to look at and analyze the ingredient list to determine whether it's, you know, synthetic compounds or whether it's something that the body can actually utilize.
How about just taking the lithium water? You know, like in Portugal, they still have lithium in it.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that as a form of entry. You know, you're taking almost lithium ions present in the water, and I think that's a beautiful way to get that in and, you know, safely. You're gonna drink water anyway. Let's make it lithium water. So that's another method if you have access to that to give that a try.
Yeah, okay. Where do you get that, Julie?
I'm sorry, what?
Where do you get it?
Oh, you can go on it's Portuguese website, and there's like an American distributor, and so a lot of the Portuguese mineral water has lithium. Where I found out that the lithium springs used to have lithium, but now somebody bought it and they're using lithium bicarbonate, and it's not as great as the Portuguese.
Do you have a link to where you went that we can share with others?
Yeah, I could send it to you.
Good. Send it to me. Let's get it up on the website also in this call.
Okay.
Hey, let's give them a plethora of information. Let's make this one of the best calls ever. Anything else? Julie, you never just have one question. What's next?
What do you suggest, to deal with diverticulitis?
Yeah, that's the Silver Aloe Gut Recovery Protocol that I wrote about in Unlock the Power to Heal, and you guys have access to that chapter for free on my website. You probably I'm sure we've shared that many times over the years. Share it again. So when you go to
RobertScoutBell.com. Repetition is part of restoration.
Yeah. So you go to RobertScoutBell.com, the RSB approved section. Scroll down one level, the Silver Aloe Protocol will pop up or just be right there. Click on it, the whole chapter pops up for you.
Okay, Robert Scott Bell, and then Silver, and then what?
Well, you go to the RSB approved section of the website.
RSB?
Yeah, my initials. RSB, my initials.
Oh, RSB website, and then you go to the menu and you look for what?
Yeah, the RSB approved tab, and then click on that, and then it'll open up all of the things I recommend and reference, and you just go down one level, and you'll see Silver Aloe Protocol, and click on that. The whole chapter opens up to explain how to do it and why and all of that.
Okay, so it's not under diverticulitis, it's under Silver Aloe.
Silver Aloe Protocol, right, because it addresses, you'll see in the chapter, it addresses everything.
Okay. Okay, look, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Anything else, Julie, or we'll come back?
I'm good, thanks.
Yolanta, welcome, young lady.
Good morning, yes. Well, first of all, my husband got diagnosed with alpha-gal, and he's not allowed to eat gelatin. Maybe because it's made from animal products, I don't know. And he has to go to an allergist because whatever, it makes you have reaction to other things, so you have to find out what other things now are bothering you, can bother you. And he had to go to pharmacy to get EpiPens for emergency now. So it's pretty bad actually. But anyway, I have a question about like brain fog and dementia. If you mm-hmm. said copper, now how much copper would you take or suggest for somebody who has like a brain fog or dementia?
Well, whatever it takes is the answer, but the sovereign copper is typically a tablespoon 3 times a day, but you might want to do a loading phase of 6 times a day. Again, the idea is to get, you know, nourish the pathways back to functionality. And when it comes to brain and neurological health, that may take a little bit more than, for instance, the 10 doses we do within an hour to get somebody out of pain and inflammation with arthritis, which is very quick. But when we're talking about the neural pathways and the brain function, it might take, you know, more consistent dosing over time than the immediate 1 hour relief, you know. So I would say at least 3 tablespoons a day, but you might consider more than that. And as long as he doesn't have Wilson's disease, which he would know if he did, a metabolic processing disorder for copper, then he can go on that right away and just keep monitoring how he's doing.
Okay. Also, what about that magnesium? Would that help her?
Enzymes, of course, are going to be very helpful. I don't know the ingredients of magnificine, but
John can answer that question.
Oh, excellent! Yeah, glad John's here. Take it away, John.
Yeah, the magnificine is just your systemic enzyme serapeptase.
Yep.
That's basically what magnificine is. And we also have Rejuvenase, which is the one that we got as part of our long haul COVID protocol or mRNA injury protocol. And Rejuvenase is what's the other one called that Dr. McCullough has in his protocol?
Which protocol you're referring
to? You know, Dr. McCullough, the big
Peter McCullough.
Cardiologist. Yeah.
Yeah.
The systemic enzyme that's in his protocol is the same one that's in Inflastat. I mean, in that product.
Gotcha.
I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, I should. Okay, well. But it takes more copper. All right.
I got a question. Do you think the copper has an application for autoimmune syndromes like ankylosing spondylitis?
Yeah, when you look at the management of the entire inflammatory immune cascade and response, it all goes through copper. So any type of autoimmune condition will be cooled by a copper. So no doubt you can give any kind of name to it and it runs through there. We unfortunately still underestimate the role that copper plays in managing so many pathways. And we've been wrongly taught to fear it like it's a cause of so many problems. But I think that they're, you know, if I talk about a nefarious scheme, at some level they know promoting copper deficiency keeps us in business. We're talking about big pharma and doctors. And if we can bring those copper scores back up, so many things disappear that are wrongly diagnosed as diseases that are really just deficiencies. And then, of course, metabolic pathway disturbance or imbalance or dysfunction due to those deficiencies. So I would have no doubt anytime it falls under the umbrella of autoimmunity, I would always look to copper as one of my primary means to correct the reason it's happening.
Okay. The natokinase was what I couldn't remember. Rejuvenase is natokinase.
Yeah. And natto, of course, is very specific to cutting certain pathways so that clotting is reduced potentially. Of course, there are other downstream considerations long-term that are often, you know, not considered and should be. but I recognize it's sort of an allopathic, semi-holistic, integrative approach that is not comprehensive, but can be, let's say, a step along the way. Just like I said, methylene blue, you will get on and go, my gosh, this is amazing. But to long-term rely upon it, I don't think is ultimately addressing the underlying issues, but it can be a viable method to get people closer to those underlying issues.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've seen our protocol for long-haul COVID or mRNA injury, but it's basically metakinase, our Inflastat product, which is a broad-spectrum proteolytic enzyme blend.
Uh-huh.
It's got serrapeptase and bromelain and a bunch of other stuff in it. But and then it's got our nitro complex, which drives nitric oxide production to help promote circulation. That's our base protocol for the long-haul recovery and mRNA injury, and we are getting incredible feedback from people who were having, you know, debilitating symptoms, and they get on that and they can think again, they don't have, you know, a lot of the issues that were plaguing them before.
Yeah.
So it's pretty powerful blend.
That's great. And again, the feedback is real. I don't dispute the arguments that are made when people say, hey, I'm on this protocol and this is where I started, this is where I am now. So you're obviously hitting some very important pathways here, so I'm glad to hear it.
All right. Now, let's see. Let's go back one more time and see. Lori, anything else?
I do. Thank you. My husband was getting like kind of bruising and marks on his arm, and somebody told him to start taking the collagen, which I was already taking, and he couldn't believe within a couple of days they all started going away. Does that also help in bones and all that too, the collagen, or is it pretty much skin and hair and nails?
Well, yeah, all connective tissue goes through, you know, the collagen, the elastin, different things like that. And once again, what causes the body or allows the body to engage all of it is copper. I've described it this way. It's the mortar that holds the brick wall together. All of these things need something to catalyze it. When we talk about enzymes, it's cupro-enzymes, copper enzymes that facilitate this. And so the efficiency of the body's utilization of collagen, for instance, as good as your husband responded, if he's, you know, wanting even more response, then add the copper into the mix. But I'm so glad that he did respond well. That tells me that he's got some level of copper presence in his body, or else it would be minimally beneficial, just the collagen alone.
Okay. And there's probably copper in low-dose collagen, I would think, right? I would hope so,
but if you read the ingredient list, a lot of these companies putting out collagen products don't know this or don't, I don't know, for whatever reason. And sometimes, of course, if they do the, you know, amino acid chelates that are made by man, they may not be as bioavailable and bioactive. And I've talked about the tests conducted on copper in food, which is ideal, right, to get it from food. But the digestive inefficiency may be at best 30 to 40% absorption, assuming good digestion, and most people don't have that, so they're probably getting less. And so if we supplement with certain forms of copper that are even less efficient than what's in food, we may get a fraction of the benefit even of the total milligram content, whereas the copper ions 1 and 2 don't require digestion and breakdown. It's a medial assimilation and utilization for the pathways. That doesn't mean I don't take other things. I take grass-fed, grass-finished, you know, desiccated and, you know, freeze-dried kind of, we call it the organ complexes, right? Because there's a lot of minerals there in a food form that the body can benefit from that are still okay to do. But I am still supplementing at least with a tablespoon of the sovereign copper every day, sometimes more when need be, like I've been this week.
Okay. I'm going to have one more. Vitamin B. I've been taking, my doctor told me to make sure I remember to take it because vitamin B12, he said if you take it every day, you won't get dementia. What do you feel on that one?
Yeah, the Bs are very important. They're more water soluble than fat soluble, so we need to take them. the right form. I do a B complex from Food Research every day. It doesn't take much, but supplementing that is another important factor in a lot of metabolic pathways as well. But a lot of the, you know, just it, once again, it's an ingredient list. Look at it. Is it, you know, pharmaceutically made in a lab and synthesized? You know, is it coming in more like food, preferably? You know, and I'm not saying there's never a point where you couldn't benefit from these other forms of supplementation, but I look at it as a cross between, you know, what we call allopathic pharmaceutical type interventions and really trying to honor the way nature works, which I lean into. I have a bias there, of course. Doesn't mean that other ways don't work. I've talked about it with vitamin C, and I've called vitamin C mo-therapy, because most vitamin C is made in a lab from, you know, GMO sugar beets. It's an isolate called, you know, ascorbic acid. And in nature, you don't find C alone. You find it in combination with a whole lot of other factors, including copper. And C can deplete copper. Does it mean C doesn't do beneficial things? No, I've seen high-dose intravenous C help people overcome some serious issues. But in the bigger picture, I always say, well, how does it impact these other things long-term? So you want to be sure to shore up things like copper when you're doing high-dose C administration. And so working with vitamin C, if I do, it would be in a whole food form, which comes with a lot of other things, and it's not mega-dosing necessarily. But that's like, again, a concept of allopathic medicine, which is as much as you can throw at something, versus now they're moving more toward the concept of microdosing, even their drugs, which is a very good, really wonderful improvement, because there can be some, you know, therapeutic benefit without as much detriment that can get us over the hump and then move more toward this direction or even further that way.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
All right. Cash, is that you from 678? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Do you have any questions?
Yeah, I had a question about binders. With the protocol, is that helpful? And if so, which binders and how would you use them?
Okay. Let's first go to John, and then let's go to Robert. John, what do you think? Binders. I never knew they existed when I was sick.
Well, I'm actually going to defer to Robert on this, because he's the naturopath. And as you know, I don't have a product in my line for chelating heavy metals and things like that for a lot of reasons. But this is absolutely like a slow pitch softball scenario for Robert, so I'm going to let him handle it.
Well, the question, it raises, of course, knowledge of an awareness that when you elicit the body's vital force, if you will, to respond and attempts to restore a balanced terrain, right, an environment where everything's functioning well, it isn't just about targeting those things for removal. It's about knowing the pathways and what it involves to get those things and usher them fully out of the body. So whether you target very specific binders for very specific things, which you can research very readily, or whether you do a more generalized approach to say, you know what, when I work with certain minerals that open up the pathways of functionality, these things will be ushered out more safely rather than get stuck in a system that isn't fully nourished back to function, right? When we talk about the lack of copper, we talk about phase one liver detox. When we talk about the lack of selenium, we talk about phase two issues of, you know, of compromise. And so binders are a legitimate topic to consider. However, I'm, you know, more broad-based in that just by understanding or not having knowledge of the pathways, nourishing entire pathways. This is where we've talked about a little bit about the side benefits that were inadvertent, like when John Hewlett developed the Cardio Miracle, it was all about nitric oxide. Then they find out through the Molinsky study at Ohio University that he was sustaining over 24 hours of production endogenously, and inadvertently, he had counteracted the rise of peroxynitrite, which always rises with nitric oxide, which you really don't want too much of that. And then it also opened up the pathways for utilization of stored vitamin D in the fat cells. But it wasn't that he targeted all of these things necessarily to happen. It was inadvertent by bringing all of the minerals and the vitamins and the nutrients in food form primarily. But all of these things nourish the pathways back to functionality, which includes the ability then to bind, right? But there are people that really focus on, hey, I know you're burdened with this specific thing, and we know that this specific thing is critical to bind it on the way out, while in conjunction or in concert, we're looking at the entirety of the system. So I'm trying to be a little nuanced in how I approach this. It isn't yay or nay. It's about, you know, everybody's got a different approach in how they succeed. But I always try to take a step back and see that bigger picture and say, all right, if I know what I'm targeting, and then I would look deeper into what are the pathways that we need to specifically nourish in this circumstance? What are the things that are needed to usher the carrying, if you will, or the modifying so it can be carried out? And when we talk about the phase two conjugation pathways of the liver, which impact a lot of toxins and metals, we can look at selenium, but there are other things. Chromium actually plays a role there as well. That it's not so much a binder focus, it's a pathway, functionality focus. I don't know if that confuses more or helps, but that's how I look at things.
Well, you've got to clear the arteries so the flow is better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, am I correct?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's one aspect, a significant aspect of it. The lymphatic system has to function. But the endothelium, as we talk about, has to be functional. And if it's dysfunctional, not only will there be sluggish movement through it, but blockages and other things can develop. But the lack of the production of certain things like the nitric oxide, and John knows about that as well. So, you know, it's not a specific answer to a specific question. It's more general. But, you know, I unless I'm working with an individual and going, all right, this is the target, and we got to look into that. What do we need? If we need additional information on what's called a binder in that circumstance or not, it might be a key mineral like I talk about here and not necessarily a binder per se.
Well, I tell people over the years that everybody is different. So to give you a general answer is not the right way to go about it. I need as much information as I can get, okay, to make good decisions to help you get where you want to be.
Yeah.
So, and then they all go, well, you always say that. And then I go, yeah, well, it's always true.
Well, there are definitely circumstances where I have recommended people take activated charcoal or chlorella or whatever, bentonite, depending on the situation that you're dealing with.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah, even the fulvic and humic acids and zeolite and all of that, there's a place for it. But there's also situations where they can be counterproductive. So it's an individual.
It is. Situation. It is the truth that everybody wants a one size fits all answer. Real healing doesn't.
There is no one size fits all answer. There is none.
Exactly.
And people go, oh, but you always say that, and I go, yeah, well, it's because it's true.
Yeah. Now, as I think about this, it brings to light something else I need to send you, Mel, so you can send out with this review of what we've done today.
Okay.
I've connected with a wonderful group of homeopaths through Global Natural Health Solutions, and we've combined in an effort to do something that's never been done before, where we're going to take one case of, and it could be someone here, they submit it, it's free to do so. And we're going to do, you know, it's like six or seven of us as homeopaths are going to review the case on my show live in August sometime. And it could be a case from this community, but you got to submit it to be considered. And if anybody needs additional help and they're not selected, that's fine. But they've given me a discount code RSB240 so you can get $240 off a really high-level homeopathic consult with a great group. So I just want to encourage you in this group, because they'll be testing the homeopaths as well. They might select one of your cases to review on the air. Now, it will be done anonymously, so nobody is, you know, embarrassed or outed, but you would get the benefit of it. And so, Mel, I'm going to send that link so anybody here, I recommend everybody do it. It only costs you the time that it takes to submit your case. but you might be selected. So I will share that link. I'll send in another email to you for everybody here to consider.
Okay, good. Very, very good. Okay, now, of course, I lost track of where I was. Dale, did we get to you a second time? Yes?
I'm good. Everything's been answered. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Good. Julie, did we get to you a second time?
Yeah, I went to RSB. I'm looking at the RSB GI Silver Allo Protocol doc, and I got some questions about if you take the allo, should it be the outer leaf, and should I take the homeopathic lower GI support by King Bio for
well,
the diabetes?
Well, if they have it. When I wrote that book, there might be some formulas that might not be available or by name available. That's why I also mentioned some individual remedies as well. But the allo is a carrier agent, in this case, for the silver primarily,
right,
to get past the stomach into the small intestine, large intestine, colon. So my preference would be to have an organic aloe that you grow yourself, if I'm, you know, a purist as I am. If you can't get that, then the closest to that, which I've recommended, you know, some options there out of Florida, of course, the Aloe One. If you're in Texas, there's an Honest Aloe that's like that. Otherwise, second best to that would be the purest organic aloe you can find that's available to you, least preserved, right, least compromised. But it's a carrier agent in that context. And the idea, of course, is to help carry the silver into the GI tract to reduce inflammation and upregulate regeneration and, of course, address any dysbiotic opportunistic microorganisms / infections. So when you talk about inner leaf, outer leaf, there are certain aspects of the outer leaf that are very irritating. Most of the companies will remove that. And, again, you'll be fine with most of what's available on the market.
I know Bio King, or King, DrKings.com is still active, and they got a homeopathic lower GI and probiotic formula.
Good. If that's still available, that's a wonderful, easy formula, water-based formula to integrate as well, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All righty. Did I miss anybody on the second go-around?
Myself. Phil Lanto?
Yeah, I know. Okay, good. Go.
I have a question. Hello?
Yes, Seth?
Yes. In taking copper, do you have to take zinc also?
Well, the Sovereign Copper is not bringing in large quantities that would disrupt the zinc that may be there that you're worried about. Will it upset the balance or reduce the zinc? Obviously, if you take large, large quantities of copper, I definitely want you taking zinc. I do the food research zinc every day. It's not a large quantity, but just a little bit, because we are, you know, more prone to taking more zinc and very little copper, which means that the relationship is often opposite of what you asked. The zinc diminishes copper much easier than copper diminishes zinc. But if you're taking the homeopathic level, if you will, and we are at the microgram level we're doing, you're really not upsetting the zinc much, if at all. If you are concerned, again, there's nothing wrong, and I encourage zinc intake, but the levels at which we're dosing copper with the Sovereign Copper would not be concerning to me whether you take extra zinc or not.
Right. And another question is, if you have an autoimmune disease, say like vitiligo, is copper... would copper make it worse, or would it help
no.
it at all?
And John B. asked that question, you know, about ankylosing spondylitis or any autoimmune issue. Copper is the manager of the entire systemic immune cytokine response. So think of it as cooling the inflammatory response rather than hyperstimulating it, which you don't want to do, obviously, with autoimmunity. So it is critical for any autoimmune situation to calm it. And do so in a way that benefits your liver, not destroys your liver.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Anybody else who has a question?
Can I comment real quick, Mel?
I'm going to go to you next, John. Well, John, I'm going to come to you next. Okay.
All right. I'll forget what I had to say.
Okay. Is there anyone that, who has another question? All right, John, you're up.
I was just going to say that we didn't put copper in the product that we were talking about earlier for that very reason, and because I'd rather people use your copper product to supplement. But if you were going to put a copper product into a bone health formulation, which form would you use?
Well, it's a good question because, let's look at, how these things are manufactured. And, I always would try to defer as close as possible to how it would come in food. So for me, it might be a consideration, and this might be opposed by some that are, vegetarian and vegan, which I don't think is optimal for most people, but to go with something like a desiccated and dried organ complex, which is more rich in food form of copper. But there may be other forms that I'm unaware of in terms of when you approach these dietary supplement manufacturers, contract manufacturers. And I would probably want to analyze what are they offering as far as the form of copper, because some are just not bioavailable at all, right? Yet they'll give you a milligram content. Others might be less quantitative but more bioavailable. So I would have to review that. I just don't know what's available out there right now. And you might have access to that by interacting with some of these manufacturers as well.
Well, we've got MagnotCal, which is a bone health formulation that's got all your, vitamin D, K, and B vitamins, and iodine, and boron, and all the bone assimilation nutrients, and so forth. But I did not put copper in that product either. So you got me thinking about whether I should have, but it might make more sense to do something like what we did with Liver CS, and putting in a desiccated liver extract, which is, as you know, loaded with heme, copper, and heme iron.
Correct. And that would be my preference, given the option. Again, there might be some other innovations I'm unaware of, but I'd really have to analyze bioavailability, bioactivity, that kind of thing. So I like the way you're thinking. If you wanted to add that in, I think it would be a great benefit.
Might do that. Thank you, buddy.
You got it.
All right. Are there any other questions?
No, I have one. If that's okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Lori.
Okay. So my grandson got, really sick this year. Really sick. And he's his brain got affected with it. It was some kind of virus, COVID or something. And would copper be something, he's 7, that he can take? Because now they're saying he's got an autoimmune system, and so it does his... Okay. And how much can he give children?
How old is he, and how much does he weigh?
He's 7 years old.
There we go.
He's probably... I don't even know. He's not very big. He's small. No, he's
so if you gave him a tablespoon of the Sovereign Copper 3 times a day, that's 450 micrograms. That meets the needs of a 4-year-old child. I want to give you perspective here that you're not overdosing a child on this, but you may provide the function to the pathways that are right now dysfunctional because of other issues or reasons. Without the copper. So I wouldn't have a problem putting them on 3 tablespoons, even though people might go, whoa, is that too much? It's not. But it's what's needed to help him recover, especially a child given an autoimmune diagnosis. That's just horrible. So I would absolutely have him. And, babies cannot grow in utero without copper, and they certainly can't grow from infancy through childhood to adolescence to adulthood without copper. So the immediate fear from the medical quacks, I'm going to call them that just immediately, rise up and tell you copper's toxic rather than considering the pathways of nourishment that are needed and are neglected. I don't think they are adequately trained in nutrition, clearly. But I would say in this case, at least a tablespoon a day. But I would, if this was my grandson, put him on a tablespoon 3 times a day and monitor how things progress.
All right. One last chance, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. Any more questions?
I have a question for John B., actually, about the MagnaCal. Would that be a good product to give a 14-year-old for growth?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because if they've got any issues, if they've developed any issues with calcium absorption and assimilation, the bringing in the several forms of magnesium will help with that. And of course, all of the other bone assimilation nutrients are incorporated in there. So it's definitely helpful. And we've seen reversal of all forms of calcification in people taking it. You can literally track bone mass gains in physician practices patients using that product. So it's definitely helpful. But a lot of the people taking our MagnaCal are also taking, other parts of the protocol, like liver CS, which does contain glandulars. Thymic formula contains glandulars as well. So our protocols are all rich in these minerals, and in the forms that are most powerful, like we were talking about, Robert and I a minute ago. Heme iron and heme copper are by far going to be the most effective forms of those minerals.
And do you know if those copper, the MagnaCal pills are large or, at 14 years old, they don't, he doesn't swallow.
No, they're not
pills.
Like the thymic, no.
Well, they're not, okay. They're not tabs, they're capsules. And what my recommendation has always been for people that have trouble with swallowing capsules is to literally take them with food. Literally chew up the food, be ready to swallow it, stick it in there with the food and swallow it down. That way you won't gag on it because you don't gag on your food when you eat it. You just swallow it. And that's the best way to help people who have a hard time taking pills or capsules.
Okay, thank you.
All righty. I'm going to say this one. This is a good call. How do I know? Nobody left. All right. It may not be funny to you, but it is to me. All right, I'm not singing today. I'm too tired, so you're all spared. I want to start and say thank you, John, and I'm really glad you showed up. I thought it would be great for you and Robert to be here at the same time. And Robert, hey. Boy, a lot of sand has gone under our feet, young man, and I'm always so grateful because you always come with a plethora of great information, and you always send us links, and there's always ways for people to get a hold of you, and you understand that toxic disease sufferers have a really tough time. And so you're always willing to share with them your time. So, John, thank you so much. Robert, thank you so much. And I'm going to send each of you in an email the other guy's number. So if you want to talk, you have easy accessibility. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you all for showing up today. Don't forget tomorrow, prayer and fellowship. I might not sing there either. So, please, everyone, have a good day, a great weekend, and if you need help, reach out. You do not have to go through this alone. God bless. Goodbye. Thanks, John. Thank you, Robin. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.